Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. HRN is food radio supported by you. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. We've been making cheese in Wisconsin since before we were even a state, which may be one reason why we win so many awards for it. It's what happens when a whole state dreams in cheese. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kara Warren, and on today's show, we have Oliver Ford. He's been working for Beehive Cheese since the creamery opened in 2005, and he's had the unique experience of working nearly every job at the company, starting as a cheesemaker and now serving as a director of sales. His positivity and passion for the family business has been instrumental to the growth of the company over many years. And we also have Britt Welsh, who has been at the creamery since he was the age of 14. Britt Welsh began as a cheesemaker, order fulfiller, and a sales associate at the Summer Farmers Markets. After getting his MBA, he moved into his current role as now president. Britt has been an ACS CCP also since 2015. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Kara.
Yeah, I'm stoked to have the Beehive team here. You know, you guys are just an incredible force in the cheese business, and I'd love to first off congratulate everyone on like 18 years. That's insane. That's a huge accomplishment. And then the second thing that I have been learning about putting this episode together is the B Corp certification. That's amazing. A huge congratulations to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think, the first thing I'd like to start off with, and I think Britt, you might be best suited for this first question, but, you know, how does it feel to be B Corp certified? According to the stats online, I saw there's only like 7 dairies out there with the certification. Is it like a lengthy process? How does that make you feel to have accomplished this?
So the first of all, it's a big deal. We're very humbled and we've received a lot of positive feedback from our peers and folks in our community. So the short of it is the certification process is like taking a pretty strenuous test. The actual process took us several months to fill out. That being said, what it truly tested was the character of Beehive Cheese, and that has taken us almost 2 decades to build. So the good news is going into this B Corp process, the idea behind B Corp, the philosophy, their little tagline, is using business as a force for good. When we started Beehive Cheese, so it was Tim, my father, and Pat, Oliver's father, that had the crazy idea of giving up their jobs in software and real estate and starting making artisan cheese. However, when they started making cheese, they were a bit disenchanted with the whole concept of software, and it goes big and everybody knows you and you're a $1 million company. And then next thing you know, you kind of crash and bonk and it moves on. So I recall Tim, my dad, saying when he started Beehive Cheese is how much he was looking forward to doing something real that we could put our hands on. And part of making cheese and actually getting our hands into the vat and having something that we could go look at in our cheese caves and really appreciate over the dinner table was the concept of building a community around the work that we're doing. And that's something we've seen over the last 18 years. So I've got my brother, both of my brothers have worked at Beehive. Currently, it's 2 of us still working there in leadership roles. We've got my cousin's family and then a handful of other families. So one thing that we've looked to do very intentionally is lay out a business that would very much be in line with how we would run our family. So the idea is it's about hard work. People earn their keep at Beehive. Ollie will chuckle. I think we hold our family to a very high standard as far as doing good quality work. But also the second thing is understanding we're members in a community and we need to give back more than we take, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So with those philosophies, B Corp was a difficult process, but it was something that really aligned with our values of taking care of our people, taking care of our community, and that crazy notion of environmentalism that we should clean up after ourselves.
Yeah, it sounds like it's very much very natural to who you guys are. I love that it was, I think for some companies it could have been like a strenuous process, but for Beehive, it's very much like who you were already. That makes it like sound actually very cool. And would you be able to talk about like what are some of the sustainable efforts that you had to do or that you were already doing to achieve the status?
Certainly. So looking at it, we're looking at the entire life cycle of the process through which we make cheese, right? So we are getting our milk from a dairy. It's the Wadelands dairy. It's a fourth generation dairy. So part of B Corp is it's all about supporting local sustainable communities. So that part, as far as our sourcing, was fairly easy for us because milk is the biggest component, the biggest input in making cheese. So by having all of our, pretty much our biggest expense coming from a local dairy, that helped us through that process. So again, we were like, okay, we're going to source local. That's something that is very much in line with B Corp. Second example would be our whey. So you're making cheese. Cheese is only about 10% yield from the milk you're using. So for every pound of cheese we make, there's about 10 pounds of whey or water that's not going to be used as the final cheese. So we are very conscientious about what we do with that whey. It's used for animal feed. So all of that whey is not just being discarded or like worthlessly thrown away. We're using that for either animal feed or like land application. In the West, we have very alkaline basic soil. So a lot of the time what they'll do is they'll use the sugars and acids in whey in order to help neutralize it and help make the land easier to use, be it farming or development.
Oh, that's super interesting because how close are you guys to Salt Lake? Like, how far is that in relationship to you guys?
I can see the wetlands from my house. So it's
really close. It's, yeah. It's not that far. Yeah. Oh, wow. Okay. So that's very helpful. Okay, cool. And then, so I'm wondering then on a marketing and a sales front, I think Oliver, this is more your speed. Is the B Corp helping you on that side of things?
Well, I'm hoping it will. Right now it's so fresh that we're still working on making sure that we get it slapped onto our marketing materials and letting people know. But I don't see, I mean, with such a small group, and if you look at the companies that have B Corp, they're nothing to shake a stick at. They're people that have been in this industry and doing good things. So that, of course, is a goal, is to get the message out there. Hey, we achieved this. And it lets, you know, the consumer know, what our values are, which me personally as a consumer, I care about the values of a company very much. So yeah, it's yet to be determined.
Yeah. Okay. I like that because it's true. Sometimes you have to work through the older stock first or the labels without the print yet. So I'm glad we're getting, it out here first on Cutting the Curd. It's like an exclusive almost.
If we were throwing out all our point of sale and throwing all that paper away, that wouldn't be very B Corp of us.
Exactly. Right on, Oliver. Way to play it. I love that. now I'm kind of curious. I don't know if this is a Brit or an Oliver question, but I'm also, again, I think it's a Brit question. On the front of an employee benefit, what are you guys? I know I saw on your website, you guys are adorable. You have a chef 4 days a week for your employees to have like a home cooked lunch. But what else is going on to make it even more interesting for your employees?
So our first core value is authenticity, and the whole concept is like, oh, hey guys, we're trying to qualify for this certification. We're going to start treating you well now. That seems very false and kind of against the grain of one, what we should be doing, and two, what we actually choose to do. So we were providing full paid healthcare benefits for all of our employees. We've been doing that for years. So that was part of that B Corp process. And also just treating people well. And I mean, we're a lifestyle company, right? We're not trying to grow 1,000,000,000% and then sell for $1 million. What we're doing is really crafting artisan cheese in our hometown in Ogden, Utah. So that's something that everybody that works at Beehive and people that have joy there, it's like, oh yeah, like we're all doing something that we love. And it's that this B Corp is just kind of putting some labels on what we've been doing for years.
Right. No, I love that. And I think it, again, it goes back to your spirit. Maybe it's even in the Utah spirit. I was hoping you could even elaborate on like some of the food culture in Utah and like, how is that related to your company? Like does the state of Utah play an influence on the Beehive Cheese Creamery at all? And I guess I could throw that to Oliver because he seemed to be talking about
Oliver's been in Utah for years. Yeah.
Well, I also just wanted to add another thing about elaborating on treating employees. And it's
Go ahead, please.
It's been a secret, and I don't know, Britt, if your dad's going to shoot me for letting it out of the bag, but if we have a surplus in profit at the end of the year, Britton's father has been sneaking it into employees' 401ks without telling them.
Oh, wow. Okay, so, that's amazing.
I just recently found out about it a few years ago, but he'll just quietly slide a good amount of money into someone's 401k and never mention it.
Oh, I got it. I love that. I mean, do you ever have a labor shortage? I hope not.
We did when everybody did. We treat people well, but cheese making is really grueling work. It's hard to, you have to find kind of the gluttons for punishment, that just love a really, physically intensive job. And we've found a really good team of those said gluttons. But, so then to answer why Beehive and being a cheese maker in Utah.
Exactly.
So Utah is the Beehive state. I've heard a rumor, you can fact check me on this, but I believe it was a nickname given to the pioneers from the indigenous population when they showed up and started to build. They said it's busy like a beehive down there. So it's named kind of after the industrious nature of, the early settlers of Utah.
Okay, cool. I didn't know that. I had not a clue, but I will fact check
it. Yeah, please do. You can fact check most of the things I say. But yeah, absolutely. I can't be trusted. But what it's like to be a cheesemaker in Utah, it was really funny. So back in the day when Tim and Pat were having their midlife crisis, instead of buying a Corvette, they started a cheese company. they were looking actually at creameries, kind of established creameries in the more typical places where you would expect, an artisan cheesemaker. And they were sitting there having a conversation with our grandma, Ruthie, who was also key in founding of Beehive Cheese, but she listened to him, talk about what they were going to do and be all confused. And she just said, "Why don't you do it here?" And the thought had not crossed their mind like one time before she mentioned it over the dinner. And they started processing that. And it's like, just because there aren't a lot of artisan cheeses here, especially in Utah, but in, the Mountain West, why not? And so they just went for it. And it has become kind of an identity to us. We're rebellious in where we decide to make cheese and also in the things we do with our cheese.
Yeah, I love that sentiment. I think one of the things that I was thinking about that I wanted to ask you guys, because it is in Utah and there's not a lot of cheesemakers in Utah, at least that I know right now. So is it the land, like the terroir that's there? How does it work for like cow's milk dairy? Like, is there enough grassland, or can you describe to the listeners why it works for Wadeland dairy? Like, I know so little about Utah and I'd love to learn more.
I'll take that, Ollie, quickly. Okay. I'll use the Spark Notes version, as as it probably picked up. I do rather like to philosophize, but so one thing that I've heard about, so like tomatoes and jalapenos, if you have them in rougher soil and harsher sun, they develop more flavor. I think a lot of that can be true just kind of anecdotally about agriculture in Utah. So we have a very harsh state, right? It's the second driest state in the country besides Nevada. Mm-hmm. But we have very harsh winters, very harsh summers. And I think it develops a uniqueness that comes through in our cheese, and it just doesn't taste quite, the cheddars from Utah don't taste quite like it anywhere else. We were doing, Weber State is a local university. They have a really avid microbiology program. They took some swabs of our cheese and found some bacteria in our cheese that actually ages, one of the non-starter lactic acid bacteria called Lactobacillus wasachensis. It's a type of strain that's only been found in cheeses that are made in Utah. And it develops some really interesting flavors that are kind of common among Utah cheeses that are very unique, and especially like our Beehive cheese, how it develops with our flavors and creates, again, it's not a California cheddar. It's not a Wisconsin cheddar. It's not a Vermont cheddar. It's distinctly Utah.
Oh, that's so cool. So you have an indigenous culture. That is really cool. I had no idea. I love that you guys like have tested and figured that out. That's okay. Cool. And so then I would love to follow up on the farm that you work with is a fourth generation farm, Jersey and Holstein. How is that working relationship for you guys? How many cows is that? Like, how does that work for you guys?
I can answer that one. So the fourth generation, they actually produce, so we don't take all of their milk. So we can, and there'll be some farmstead cheesemakers getting jealous here, but we can increase and decrease our production at different times of the year. And that's been, you know, in this area, there's a company called Gosner, who takes a lot of the milk in the area. So we kind of have a handshake agreement with Gosner, and they, you know, back in the beginning, they said, "You're crazy for making, you know, artisan cheese out here, but here's our list of dairies, pick one." And so we, have been, I mean, we buy quite a lot of milk from Wade's, but we probably only take 40% of what they produce, and it's been invaluable for us as a company trying to grow and having, you know, it's a kind of a cyclical business. So we don't need as much cheese at certain parts of the year as compared to, you know, the holiday, holiday rush. So it's been fantastic. We visit with them. We can go visit and see their animals. And a key factor is they are farm certified. It's an acronym. If I were smarter, I would know what the acronym stood for.
Essentially, we'll add it as a footnote.
But essentially what it means is that the dairy is up to date on humane practices and the current best farming and animal husbandry practices.
Yep. And I saw that online, like no hormones, no antibiotics, like very clean milk. That's awesome. Yeah. That's really good.
The clean milk is key. They keep it very clean for us.
Yeah, that is. And it's great that it's like one farm. Like you don't have to worry about like multiple groups and like putting the milk together. I think that is, that's a plus for you guys on the business side. Actually gravitating to another business question, because I liked this quote I saw on the website. It says that more than 80% of raw goods come from local producers and farms, with 60% of expenses spent with local and independent suppliers. That's what you guys are able. You're able to keep it super local. From a business standpoint, how easy is that to do, to keep 80% of raw goods from local producers and, like, again, 60% of expenses spent with local independent guys? How are you able to do this? I know sometimes money can be tight, but it seems like you have a very somebody in the group has – I know there's an MBA in there, like I mentioned about before. Maybe that's helping it. But, like, how are you guys able to plan and strategize that?
So I'm going to be very honest here. This is like the full transparency.
Sure.
When I read that, I was terrified. So I did the numbers and like actually put together the spreadsheet, because again, they're certifying us. We need to substantiate these claims that we're making as I think we should.
Mm-hmm.
So I went in, I'm like, I don't know how we're going to do this. Like if we fall short, are we going to have to like call up longtime suppliers and be like, I'm sorry, we can't do business with you anymore because B Corp said we can't.
Mm-hmm.
And the cool thing, so these certifications are neat, and I think they do drive important management decisions, as they should. However, there was a quote I remember from business school, and this I've taken with me, and it's, culture eats strategy for breakfast. So you can plan all you want in the world, and you can make all these wonderful management initiatives and decisions, but at the end of the day, really who you are is those little small decisions that you make every day in your culture. And the surprising thing with that 80% certification, when we were going through and actually crunching the numbers of who we're spending money with, we came in at 85% without having to make any management decisions.
Wow.
So our relationships over the past 18 years have led to us spending 85% of our money with local people. Like, that blew my mind away.
Oh my goodness. That is, what a great feeling to know that you're supporting good people. That's just like the extra metal bonus of so many things in life, I feel like. And you're making great cheese on top of that. So that's all.
And I feel like that's just part of the DNA of American artists and cheesemakers. We're just like, well, that guy's local. Why wouldn't we go with him?
Right. Totally. No, I love that. Oh my goodness. Okay, cool. I want to take a quick commercial break from our sponsor. We're on such a high right now, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the flavors of the different cheeses that you guys make at Beehive. So, okay, everyone, you're listening to Cutting the Curd, and we'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. There's a reason when you think of Wisconsin, you think cheese. Cheese is a huge part of Wisconsin's history and future. In Wisconsin, the state of cheese, the tradition of cheesemaking excellence began 180 years ago, before Wisconsin was recognized as a state. Immigrants traveled to settle in this lush green hills of Wisconsin, bringing their cheesemaking traditions with them. These storied skills combined with the freshest milk available created a cheesemaking culture that is uniquely Wisconsin. Wisconsin's 1,200 cheesemakers, many of whom are third and fourth generation, continue to pass on old world traditions while adopting modern innovations in cheesemaking craftsmanship. Find your next favorite cheese at wisconsincheese.com.
Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. I'm here with the Beehive guys, aka Britt and Oliver. We're talking all cool things Utah, all cool things flavored cheeses, and I am now really stoked to deep dive into the classic that we call Barely Buzzed, which is a cheddar cheese with coffee grounds rubbed onto the rind. I'm not sure which person should take this question, but I'd love to hear how the concept came about. And are you tired of eating Barely Buzzed yet? Do you guys get espresso caffeined out? How do you feel?
Well, I will take it. It was actually Britain's father, Tim, that came up with the idea. But I won't talk too long, but Barely Buzzed came about from a combination of things. So you have these two entrepreneurs that don't know anything about cheese making. I think they had 8 days of schooling on cheese making and an advanced short course at Utah State. And so they were deciding what style of cheese to make. And right around that time, Utah State called, and Utah State is a land grant university. So their mission is to transfer technology to the private sector. And they said, will you take our recipe to market? And they were elated to have this because that they have 8 days of experience, and they Utah State has the people that developed this recipe with some really, really smart dairy scientists. So that was key. So they just got handed a recipe, which we've found has changed over the years just through being artisan and not having all the controls. It's from the original recipe, we make something that's slightly different now. But so they had this cheese, this fantastic beginning. They're entrepreneurs. They want to put their stamp on it. And what I always say is it's really easy to break the rules if you don't know what the rules are. Mm-hmm. So we don't here in the US, we don't have hundreds of years of tradition in cheese. We're kind of just, cowboys out here. So Tim had, some coffee that his brother, roasts. And some lavender. And so he ground it up, rubbed it on a wheel of cheese because why not? He didn't know what the rules were. And so we had about 5 pounds of this Barely Buzzed. This is probably in 2006. Mm-hmm. We tasted it and we're like, wow, this is really good. This is really good. So I think we had, 2 pounds of it. We took it to the 2006 American Cheese Society and kind of shared it with our peers and got some really good responses. So we went back, made a little bit more. By a little bit, Britton, do you know, was it 50 pounds? Was it 20 pounds?
Couple wheels, yeah.
Yeah, made a couple more wheels and entered it into the 2007 American Cheese Society competition. And it took first place for flavored cheddar.
Oh, yeah.
So it was, I had not heard of anything before it, and I still haven't. So it was a brand new idea that came out of just two inexperienced, enthusiastic entrepreneurs trying to do something different with and put their stamp on this beautiful promontory that they were given.
Yeah, because promontory is the original recipe. Like, I was learning this about, as I was doing the research for this, I didn't realize that that was the name of the original. And then Barely Buzz was like the spin on it, which I also didn't realize as you were talking about this, there was lavender. Is there still lavender in the Barely Buzz recipe? I didn't realize that.
There is still lavender in the Barely Buzz recipe.
Ah, cool. I always thought it was just coffee. That's okay.
It's very, very subtle.
Subtle. Too much lavender is a killer for me. I can't do lavender. It just overwhelms me. But
with lavender, Barely Buzzed is very different.
Yeah, and I mean, then there you go, and you have the type. So you're saying the type of lavender is also a little bit different, or is it?
The French lavender, just by having the lavender in there. So Tim, my dad, he's the type of person that they'll go out fishing in like a beautiful little river in the mountains, and that evening they'll cook up the fish and serve it on like a flat stone found on the river. So it's like the idea of just love, right? Like we love our food, and we're crazy about the silly, like, quirky but special things we do for our food. Same thing. So my uncle, he's no longer with us. Dan Welsh was driving his motor home through Grand Junction, Colorado. And he's like, oh, this seems like a good place. I like it here. So they put up a coffee roasting place there, but just having that coffee and the passion that goes into making those flavors combined with with our cheese, it's cool. The love that comes together to produce these crazy flavors that, like Ollie's saying, it's just a lack of tradition, but just a real connection with the now that creates these wild things.
Oh my goodness. So this kind of leads into my next question of what was it like for you to grow up in American artisanal cheese families? This has been your entire life. You've been influenced this like all the time in every aspect of every way of your life. How does that go?
Ollie's unpacking all of this. I need to tell this story that made me laugh. So in the day, I mean, there were times that we didn't have very many cheesemakers. Like it was like, okay, we just work and there's work to get done. And somebody calls in, it's like, okay, Pat and Ollie, you're going to work a 17-hour shift together. So there's father and son. And by the end of the day, I think they'd finished at like 2 o'clock in the morning. And like, it was the three of us in there and I'm watching these guys. They're like punch drunk after working and are just delirious running around the make room, filling each other's boots up with water, just laughing. it's family work and just, you get along and you fight and you figure it out.
Yeah, no, I think that's perfect. And I think that's how all cheese making should be done if possible. Isn't it like happy people who make happy cheese or something crazy? I feel like I've heard that from another cheesemaker or something like that.
I think your attitude does matter in making cheese. And part of it, so you were right for like our adult lives, but me personally, I didn't know anything about cheese up until I was, 15, 16. And, Pat, my dad, he sold recreational property. And so I knew like Kraft singles and those kind of cheeses, but we didn't know anything. It's kind of funny. So even Pat, they went to a local retailer with lots of styles of cheese and they were tasting it. This is when they were deciding what they were going to make. And he had to write this cheese's name down because it was so good. And he didn't want to forget what it was. And it was Parmigiano Reggiano. That's how little this started with. And I wish I were more supportive, but you know, Pat would come home and he had his own custom made smoker, and I'd say, "What are you doing?" And he'd say, "I'm going to smoke a wheel of cheese and see how it goes." And I would just make fun of him because I'd never heard about smoked cheese. I was just like, "No, you don't smoke cheese. Come on, get out of here." So, it was a total shift in life, right? You know, right at about that high school age.
That's funny. So you were a teenager, and he was a pioneer. And look where you are now. You're director of sales.
Yeah, about that. I mean, like Britton said, Pat one day is just like, "Ollie, I don't like managing people. You do it."
Listen, now it's really your whole life, and yeah. It's such a cool company. I mean, hearing you talk about it on this program, I know you do like it. You're just a cool kid about it, which I love too about you. So props on that. I do want to move on to this next thing, which is is it considered a new flavor? It's kind of a few years, but I think I consider it new. First of all, the cool thing, I've just been hearing good, like, people talking this up around the cheese world. It's the 2021 World Cheese Award winning Red Butte Hatch Chili Cheese. I'm curious, like, how was that developed, and like, why do you guys think it's so good?
Britton, do you remember the origins of Red Butte? I'm drawing a blank.
Yeah, so we had some friends from a local retailer come in. We're just like, "You can make any cheese you want. What do you want to make?" And they're like, "Oh my gosh, we've got these really yummy New Mexican chilies." And there was like a person from Hatch, and they're like, "They taste different from here than anywhere else. And you have to try it." We're like, "Okay, cool." So they made it, and we loved it so much. We're like, "Guys, can we have this cheese? Like, can we have this cheese flavor?" So they gave it to us, and it's amazing. Cool. Like, it's our second best seller behind Barely Buzzed. So the Red Butte, the reason I think it works so well is it's very balanced. The Hatch chilies have a nice sweetness, but also a savoriness with the heat. So it's just, again, like, I think flavor is all about that balance. And as you're introducing all of these flavors into a cheese, it throws off how the cheese ages, right? Like, these chilies are naturally, they're high in water. They're a vegetable. So if you throw that into the paste of the cheese cultures are going to interact with that, and it changes how it ages. But the Red Butte, just the creaminess of it and that higher moisture content leads to some really excellently aged cheese.
Wow. Okay. So first of all, I have to tell you, in my head, I thought these were dried chilies. So the fact that they're fresh is another thing that I did not account for.
I would not, if you make cheese, I would not recommend putting any sort of plant-based anything inside of cheese that you're planning on aging.
We're committed at this point, though.
Yeah, so. We're committed.
I see what's going on. This was a good idea that got crazier. Okay.
Okay.
I see. Okay.
But delicious. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, like, one of the things I'm hoping to do at some point is make a nacho cheese with it. I hope that doesn't like make it like downgraded in any way. But I was just like thinking about how like delicious that would be.
And mine's too short to use bad nacho cheese, honestly.
Yeah. That's what. Okay. Thank you. I good set of nachos deserves an amazing, amazing cheese to be with it. So I'm excited for this summer to have that opportunity.
I'll give you words of warning though. It's a nice mild spice when it's eaten, you know, at room temperature.
Okay.
When you melt it down, it ups the spice quite a bit.
Oh, okay. So that is that's an interesting point that I also would not have anticipated. Good tip, Ollie. Thank you for that. Listeners, heed his advice. I want to put out there, this is like a seasonal thing. Like, are your cheeses, because there are a few flavors now, do you intend for them to be seasonal, or is it just like eat them anytime you want?
We're actually working. It's anytime you want. I mean, cheese is a great preservative. I mean, that's
true.
One of the main reasons why cheese was so popular. It's just a great, hearty, durable, high protein food. So we can, you know, I've had our cheese. Some of it will come of age, you know, in as little as 3 months. But then I think the oldest I've had our cheese is at 7 years. And obviously the flavor profile and the texture changes a lot, but the 7-year-old cheese I had was fantastic. So we can make enough to have it last. as far as seasonal cheeses, mm-hmm. we are working on a few things that we do. I mean, we do, for lack of a better word, and I think it's kind of funny, we call it repressed cheese. So we'll take a wheel of Barely Buzzed and we will shred it. And then we will add a Cabernet to that shred, and then we will press it back into a wheel and cut it. We do the same thing with our tea hive. So we shred a wheel of the tea, and then we add a dark rum and raisins and press it back in. So that's kind of our holiday time releases. But, you know, it's kind of fun to play with new things and try and break the mold again like we did with Barely Buzzed. So we're working on it.
Reinventing the wheel.
Yeah, I love that. That's a very cool idea. Is that something you can see nationally, or is it just local to Utah?
You can get it nationally, but it goes through the Beehive Cheese website.
Okay. So that's an order direct. Got it.
Yeah, that's okay. An order direct. Yeah.
That's cool. We just put a plug in for that. I love that. Beehivecheese.com. No, that's super cool. And I wanted to ask you guys about this. And if you're not in the mood to answer it, just make up something. But like, how is it getting your cheese out of Utah to everywhere else? Because, I mean, I'm based on the East Coast, and I see your cheese in a lot of stores. How does that work for you guys with logistics?
Honestly, I mean, it's expensive, right? And as you know, anybody that's ordering perishable stuff from across the country, there's a cost associated with it. But mm-hmm. for the most part, it's fairly straightforward. We ship out lots and lots and lots of packages during the holiday season. And so long as the weather accommodates, we have very high success rates. I mean, our customers are very satisfied and come back year after year. So it's difficult, but we're professionals and we've kind of, knock on wood, figured it out.
And the second layer of that question is getting it into the stores that you mentioned. And that's a little more difficult. We do have a third-party warehouse that we ship, you know, whole pallets to, so that distribution on the East, you know, not everybody's going to take a whole pallet for mm-hmm. a store, and it would be cost prohibitive, but we can split that cost out and have people pick up from a warehouse in New Jersey instead of, you know, Ogden, Utah.
Yeah. No, that's
that logistic is a little more difficult, you know, keeping stock and predicting things, but we're going to get there eventually.
Well, so, but your shelf life, how long is the shelf life on a wedge that you guys have, like a year, or is it?
It's close. It starts with about 210 days.
That's great. That's mm-hmm. amazing though. Like, I mean, and it's good cheddar, so it'll just sell itself once it gets there.
The struggle we have, it could be more, honestly, but that wonderful Lactobacillus wasanchensis that gives us a nice unique flavor, mm-hmm. Or contributes to it. It also likes to produce carbon dioxide. So on one hand, it's wonderful. And on the other hand, it's the bane of my existence. So, you know, if the bags start to loosen because it's releasing carbon dioxide, it's not appealing to a customer. So the cheese is going to be fine. Yeah. But the appearance, like if there's a balloon with a cheese wedge inside of it on the shelf, you're not going to pick it up.
Yeah, no. I'll look out for that when I'm in the East Coast. I'll be like, hey, I found this one, guys.
It's probably the best cheese, though. It's the oldest.
Yeah. Well, okay. I just have like a few more questions left. And it's basically like, what is the future of Beehive as a company? Or do you have any other flavor collabs coming out that's going to be seen nationally that we should know about here on the program?
I think we've got some stuff in the works, but it's top secret right now.
Sorry,
we're not going to roll it out quite yet. We'll have to do another podcast soon.
Oh, okay. I love that. Will it be at Fancy Food Show coming up in June?
Ooh, that's a good question. So the reason why it's top secret is we don't know if it's good yet.
Oh, you should say it like that. Oh my God, who are you?
No, it has to be fantastic. Why we can't get everybody excited and then, you know,
yeah,
roll out the subpar cheese.
No, that's fair. That means like if it does make it to the shelf, it was really tested out. So it's like the gourmet. You've checked it, you know, it's good enough, you know.
The short answer is we're always working on new things. So whether not all of them are great, a lot of them are fun, but it's only the ones that are brilliant that we'll be seeing out in the bigger world.
It's fair usually enough. About 30 to 1, 30 experiments and one makes it.
That's a lot. That's a lot of testing. I appreciate your candor on this. That is, wow. Okay. Well, then I'm really looking forward to it. See, the tease did work. Well done. I wanted to thank you both for coming on the program today. This was awesome to have you guys.
It was a lot of fun.
Thank you, Kara. This was a treat.
Yeah, you guys are, you're welcome back here anytime. I really like the combo of your wisdom, the laid back Oliver and the really, you know, Britt, you know your stuff. So thank you both again. This was great.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So I just want to put it out to the listeners. Hey guys, please follow them on Instagram at Beehive Cheese or go to their website and you can buy their cheeses, which are delicious, at beehivecheese.com. Plus you can follow us at Cutting the Curd and myself at Kara Warren. And please listen, subscribe to Cutting the Curd wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, don't forget to give us a 5-star review on wherever you listen to your podcasts. Thanks and eat more cheese. Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.